You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Welcome to Right Side Radio. Jeff Poore here. Maybe I jumped the gun a little bit on that introduction. You have to excuse me, but Phil taking some well-deserved time off, and you got me. You hear me on the Grand Council on Wednesdays, but I'm Jeff Poore. I'm a host a show in a place called Mobile, Alabama, in the mornings here on FM Talk 106.5, but a regular on this program. And also, for those of you listening on WVNN, will remember me. This is my old time slot, 2 to 5. So anytime I can come back and fill the airwaves up in Huntsville, I always seize that opportunity. But I am here today. We got a jam-packed show for you. Here in about a half hour, we'll have Paul DeMarco, a friend of mine. He's a columnist, used to be the Republican Party chairman for Jefferson County, but also a state legislator. And this is kind of an issue that I think gets missed a lot, but I hammer it. I'm not a big fan of Governor Kayabe these days, but I think it's just a crying shame of what's going on with Alabama's prisons and the way they're being handled. And I'm not one of these like lefty, bleeding heart liberals. No, it's just there's just nothing going on. And we're going to talk to Paul about this because there's a historic parallel that we must talk about. This is why I want to get him on. And I got to kind of give you a real quick synopsis here. But in the 1970s, Alabama was in the same situation with its prisons. They were a violation of the Eighth Amendment, no cruel and unusual punishment. And all of you that don't care about prisoners, I mean, the Eighth Amendment is part of the Bill of Rights, too. So just remember that when you got your don't tread on me gazzard flag out, and it's time to respect the Constitution. But Alabama believed not to be in compliance with the Eighth Amendment. And that was the same situation Governor Wallace had that Governor Ivey's facing today. Well, rather than just figure out, let's just get it done, Wallace dilly-dallied around, and he made it all about an overreaching federal government, which we would all agree federal government could be overreaching at times. But the next governor got stuck with this prison problem, and that was Fob James, if y'all recall. Well, some of us are... I think, speaking out of line here, out of turn here, by thinking that you're probably going to have Will Ainsworth as the next governor of Alabama. He's about to inherit a significant problem because his predecessor is asleep at the switch on this issue. I am convinced. And whenever she's asked about it, she has no good answers. So anyway, she's the governor. She can complain about the legislature all she wants, but guess what? She's been governor for a while now. More than a term. And we're going to talk to Paul DeMarco about that. He's got some interesting insights and really what's going on. Price tag-wise, they had a special session in 2021 on a new prison, on two new prisons, and that was 2021. We had to rush and do it in a special session. Nothing's been done yet. Very little. I think some pipe has been laid in Elmore County, but we'll talk to Paul about that. Also on the program, those of you in the Coleman listing area, State Senator Garland Gudger. And also, speaking of Governor Ivey and this, well, we're going to get him to come talk about Interstate 65, and you've heard this controversy. So Donald Trump, Friday night at the Alabama Republican Party dinner, mentioned I-65 and widening 65, six lanes. And obviously that had the fingerprints of one Will Ainsworth on it, but Governor Ivey, not necessarily very outspoken about this. She's got her own highway project, but we're going to talk to Senator Gudger about this because he sponsored a resolution back in during the 2023 regular session saying the State Department of Transportation, When John Cooper could take a break from threatening his neighbor down in Gunnersville, start planning and thinking about widening 65, especially where the bottlenecks are between Birmingham and Montgomery. How many of you go that route ever? On a Saturday, you got backups in the middle of nowhere, Chilton County, because of checkout time down in Orange Beach. And something needs to be done, but there just doesn't seem to be any interest in getting anything done. So we're going to hit on that with Senator Gudger. Looking forward to that. And finally, Alabama Republican Party Chairman John Wall. We'll spend some time with him. He's been very busy in the news. Number one, they had their big dinner, as I just mentioned. We'll talk about that, the success they've had. We'll also get into some of the other things. The rules that the new rule they have added to the bylaws that forbids AEA contributions to certain offices on the Republican ticket. Yeah, in case you get you caught up here, we talked about this on the Grand Council, and we talked about it a bunch. But the Alabama Education Association, which is essentially the teachers' union, is if you're running on a Republican ticket, you're now forbidden from taking their money. If you're running for school board on the county level or on the state level, and I think superintendent where they're elected. But the school board angle here, it's interesting because the municipalities, you don't run on a partisan ticket. The municipalities, so if you're running for city school board, if your city has a school board, there's no party label there. So that wouldn't apply there, but the counties and the state school board, you can't do it anymore. And they think that this is sort of an entree to something bigger, a bigger rule concerning the Alabama legislature. Now, how you feel about that? A lot of Republicans seem to be for that. And we can get into all the reasons behind that. But anyway, let us know, 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT if you prefer the alphanumeric keyboard compared to just the plainly numeric keyboard. But that's the lineup today. We'll talk a little bit. I guess we'll kick it off here. What's in the news? And by the way, this is my now fourth hour of radio, so the conditions could deteriorate as we go. Still kind of dominating the news. Well, Trump's always in the news, but I do want to touch on the Montgomery brawl. Any of y'all keeping up with the Montgomery brawl? So the Montgomery brawl, and here's the timeline. On Saturday, there was a big rambunctious brawl out on the riverfront in our state's capital, just blocks away from where I happened to be that day for the Alabama Republican Party confab. But there's a thing you could do here is get on a pontoon boat downstream in Selma, Alabama, go upstream to Montgomery on the pontoon boat, dock, and enjoy all the amenities of Montgomery nightlife or day life, whatever it may be. And I guess we're just somebody that they're drinking. It's roughly 45 miles between Montgomery and Selma. Probably a lot longer if you follow the Alabama River. But I guess you could consume a lot of Michelob Ultra. So when there were some gentlemen, they got there, they were maybe a little intoxicated and decided they were going to park where a riverboat is supposed to be parked, and the riverboat came into dock, and there's this this pontoon boat with a bunch of drunk and empty beer cans in it, and then you've seen the video by now. If you haven't, you live under a rock. Well, it started out a Saturday. Here's this incident. And then Saturday night, started seeing some videos of it. And, you know, the internet is the internet, and there's always crazy videos or something. But as time progressed, we get to Sunday, the videos go viral. By Monday, oh my gosh, it's on Fox and Friends and Morning Go, and all the cable newsers are like, wow, look at this crazy video. And then by Monday night, Tuesday, it's could race play the factor? And there's something I want to talk about, but I'll tell you what, right now, let's work in a break. Boomer, let's go to break, and I'll try to pick this up on the other side. This is Jeff Poor filling in for Phil Williams on Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Right Side Radio. Jeff Poore filling in for Phil Williams, former state senator Phil Williams. Always a pleasure to be filling in on this show. As I said, anytime I have the opportunity to fill in on my old station WVAN, even if it is we're sharing the time with another station, I seize upon that opportunity, especially given it is my old time slide. I left Huntsville in 2020 to go to Mobile, where I'm on FM Talk 106.5. In case you're wondering where Phil is, he's getting some well-deserved time off. So anyway, if you are listening, so I was recapping the whole ordeal with the Montgomery brawl and what happened. And like I said, I didn't know this phenomenon existed, but apparently you get in a boat in Selma and you consume copious amounts of Michelob Ultra and I don't know what else, and you float on down to Montgomery and you dock there at the riverfront, and you apparently you park in the wrong place or whatever, but you've seen the video. And on Saturday, the incident, on Sunday, the crazy viral video, Monday, the national media sees it. Wow, look at this crazy fight. There's a guy with a chair beating up a guy. Yeah, and, it's just like WrestleMania. But then it went to a dark place by Tuesday. Hey, this is Montgomery. This is Alabama. Everybody knows people in Alabama are racist. Is there a hate crime charge here? And it is remarkable the way the national media have handled this, watching this. And so Joy Reid, who is Joy Reid? It doesn't matter. Well, she's an MSNBC host. You're like, what's MSNBC? That doesn't matter either, but it's a cable news channel, so you may or may not be familiar with, but it leans very hard left. And I don't know who it's for, but it is for somebody. So they have Stephen Reid, who is the mayor of Montgomery, on. And Joy Reid's sitting there speculating with Reid. It's like, well, Mayor, Donald Trump was in town a day earlier. Do you think the magic of Donald Trump, or whatever, the evil sorcery of Donald Trump, just his presence contributed to these hostile acts? And I think Stephen Reid, and I'm paraphrasing here, but Stephen Reid's like, I don't think it helped or something. And they're speculating, that, yeah, well, we don't know, but we're not ruling it out. Donald Trump is a very polarizing guy, and who knows? Well, okay. And then they speculate about hate crimes, and even though a day earlier the police chief there in Montgomery said, we couldn't find any evidence of that. There was a boat captain who said something similar of the riverboat, and then he kind of changed his tune. But this is where it gets important, guys. Stick with me here. I know this is a very tedious, long journey here to where I'm trying to go. Well, let's operate on this premise that Donald Trump had something to do with it. Got to thinking about it. Well, you know what? We know who these people are. Well, three of these suspects. We know who these suspects are. We know one gentleman's name, Richard Roberts, Orange Beach, 48, Alan Todd of Selma, 23 years old, and Zachary Chase Shipman, also of Selma at 25, all charged with misdemeanor third-degree assault. Well, let's look up their voting record. Now, in Alabama, you don't register like you do in other states. So I could say these people are registered Republicans or registered Democrats, but there is a record kept of which primaries they vote in if they chose to vote. Everybody, if you vote a Republican primary, then it shows up on the voter rolls. And if you previously voted in a Democrat or Republican primary, it will be indicated on the voter rolls. And these voter rolls are public information. They are available publicly. I think they charge you pennies on the dollar. We're going to speculate here that Donald Trump had something to do with this. Let's look and see if there was any indication these guys were just rabid Republicans, drunk Republicans inspired by Dear Leader Big Bad Orange Man to go mix it up with a African-American riverboat first mate. I mean, let's just look and see. Well, Richard Roberts, the Orange Beach, nothing there in Baldwin County. Alan Todd couldn't find anything on there, but lo and behold, Zachary Chase Shipman. He's a convenience store owner that I think has been shuttered because of his antics. He's a Democrat primary voter. Registered to vote in 2016, and he voted in the 2016 election. He voted in the 2017 special election with Doug Jones and Roy Moore. Y'all remember that one. What a hoot that was. 2018, voted in the general election and, well, wait for it, the Democrat primary. He's a Democrat voter from Selma, Alabama. Is that typical that one could be inspired by Donald Trump to do dastardly deeds, yet vote for Democrats in a Democrat primary? Now, I know what you're thinking out there. Well, it's Dallas County, and you have to vote in Democrat primary because everybody runs on the Democrat ticket. So? Is that, do people who are that civically engaged, are they inspired by Dear Leader? I keep calling him Dear Leader and being facetious, so don't get upset with me here. But I want you to think about that. I think it's all nonsense. Trying to tie it to Trump, trying to tie it to race. How about just drunken buffoonery? Now, if I had my way, maybe the charge is a little stiffer than third degree assault charges, misdemeanor. Maybe you go after something a little stiffer here, like public intoxication. I don't know. There's got to be something else they could throw at him. But hate crimes. The FBI is investigating hate crimes here because of a bunch of idiots with national TV shows. It makes my skin crawl. But they're still trying to append something more nefarious. That all of a sudden people are hearing racial slurs or something, and I don't know. They'll get these guys on what they're guilty of, but we don't need to manufacture crimes. It's just not what we need to do. It's embarrassing the way some of these people handle this stuff. But such as it is, that's the world we live in. I guess the lesson here is, ladies and gentlemen, don't go get loaded up on, especially if they're drinking Michelob Ultra. I thought Anheuser-Busch beers were taboo for John Birch Society types. But clearly, something like this can happen and not be racially and or politically motivated. Can we just agree on that? Is this a difficult concept? Am I waiting? Am I off base here? Let me know. 833-687-4448. Are those of you with the alphanumeric keyboard? 833-68 right. RIGHT. Yeah, you know, like right. It's good to be right. So a conservative, and just plain right, as I'm told. But I wanted to kick off the show with that. There'll be other soliloquies throughout this program, as there often are. But I think we know what we know now. And this is the big Alabama story. I'm curious to see where this is going to go. Got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is Jeff Moore filling in for Phil Williams on Right Side Radio. To Right Side Radio here on FM. I knew I was going to do this here. Welcome back to Right Side Radio. Jeff Moore filling in for Phil Williams, getting some well-deserved time off. I am your show host. You may know me from FM Talk 106.5 down to Mobile, But I'm here for Phil, and it's always good to be back on. I'm going to tell hello to all my friends on WVNN. Let's kick it off here. My first guest of today's program, he's a regular on my show, but I wanted to get him on, talk Alabama prisons and just the underwhelming follow-through here, I suppose, is the way the 2021 legislative special session, and nothing's really going on. But Paul DeMarco, former chairman of the Jefferson County Republican Party, former lawmaker, but he's a columnist, Kareem, a Trustful Tribune, some other places. Paul, good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon, Jeff. Hope you and the listeners this afternoon are having a great day.
Doing well. Well, Paul, and I want to get you on specifically to talk about this, and then I'll kind of set it up here for you. But you were the one who kind of clued me into this, and I've been trying to spread the gospel, but probably not as artfully as you would, that right now there's a crisis in the Alabama Department of Corrections. There's money, $1.2 billion with a B dollars allocated for two prisons. It doesn't look like it's going to be enough to even build one prison, perhaps. But such as it is, very little movement since that 2021 legislative session. Governor Ivey not even showing any concern, I think, publicly. And when she's asked about it, she just kind of hems and haws and says she's doing the hard work of the Alabama people or something. But anyway, I want to get you, because there's a historic parallel here, isn't there? And we could go back to the 1970s, similar situation, and Governor Wallace and what he left behind for Bob James. What do you think, though? I mean, is that a reach to think that the governor's successor, Governor Ivey's successor, will be in a similar circumstance as Bob James was in the late 1970s?
Well, what are we, 3 years away from the next election, Jeff?
Yeah, so 2026.
You think these prisons will get built in 3 years?
No. Well, you know, here's the question, and I know you have your differences with the Alabama Appleseed folks, but I'll trust them on this one. They think that this goes to federal court. It could be years, 3 years before any, you know, it is all resolved and the Supreme Court rules on it. And I don't know. I think the Supreme Court's a wild card, especially when it comes to Alabama, as we learned through redistricting. And if you do put the prisons in some kind of receivership or conservatorship or whatever they want to call it, the next governor is probably going to be the one that has to deal with it, not Kay Ivey.
I hope that's not the case. I mean, I don't care if you're Republican, Democrat, black, white, conservative, liberal. Well, maybe some of these folks who are against any sort of imprisonment disagree, but we got to get this fixed. We got to get it right. This has been an issues decades-long problem in the state. We know it. And it's not easy. It's not sexy to go back to the voters. But we have had plenty of success in other parts of the state when it comes to economic development. And look, we got to get this right. And we got to get it right sooner rather than later. And it shouldn't be just the threat of a federal takeover. We need to get it right, because we have to have a prison system that punishes those that commit crimes. And in this state, considering 80% of those in our state correction facility are those that commit violent crimes, I don't want to hear some of these progressive groups in Montgomery say they're against mass imprisonment, because who do they think are in these state prisons? It's individuals who've been sentenced to violent crimes, 80% of them. So, you know, look, I don't think the governor's office is ignoring it. And it is true that construction costs, I mean, you ask anybody who's building a residential house if construction costs have gone up. But the question is, you know, what will it take to get this in place? And the legislature has raised the pay of corrections officers. But what more is it going to take to get it right, Jeff?
Well, I you know, I thought we had this figured out, though, and they had the money, they allocated the money. They even Paul said we're going to even tweak the some of the sentencing guidelines, make them retroactive, which seemed just crazy to me. But fine, we build new prisons, and we got to make a concession somewhere. Well, you got the retroactive execution of that part of the special session. But the last I checked, other than maybe some plumbing laid into the ground somewhere in Elmore County, very little is being done on getting these prisons. And I know no one can explain to me the holdup. You asked the Senator Clyde Chambliss, I think a very reputable and a guy that is doing his best to be a public servant, will say, well, everything's kind of going as scheduled. And that doesn't make sense to me. But I wanted to see, you know, is there something we're not being told here? Am I crazy to think that?
Look, again, and I do trust Clyde Chambliss because I've dealt with him on enough issues to know that he's there for the right reasons. I'm like you. I think all of us, we want to see these built. I mean, the cost is incredible. But you and I talked about the other day, they're building a new prison in Fulton County. It's going to be $2 billion. I want to see what this thing's going to look like. And for $2 billion for one prison for one county, of course, it's Fulton County. But still, I think all of us are ready to get this behind us, to get some sort of resolution to this correction system, because do other states, and I haven't looked across the country, do the other states have the same issues? We know California, they released a bunch of the prisoners back in the 70s, but, I mean, do other states have the same issue? Why can't we have the leadership in place to get it correct at our state corrections facility?
Well, it's this, and look, they fumbled around with the lease build that was not going to – I mean, that seemed to be just, you know – the governor not really willing to work along with the legislature. And look, she's right to say previous governors or previous legislatures have not gotten this right. But I, you know, now's not the time for that discussion. She was elected governor. She is the governor. But I feel, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I get the sense that it's just like it's a little too nonchalant for my liking. And that's why it got me thinking, like, the next governor is about to get stuck with this problem. And if you look at, you know, the cost, the price tag, I mean, what's that going to do to the general fund? This is something that we're not even planning for, it seems like.
Well, look, let's not wait for a court-ordered special session to address this. I mean, to me, it would make sense to have in Montgomery and get a complete briefing to the public and the leadership. Here's where we are. So these are fair questions to ask, Jeff, because we are concerned. We want to have a competent and well-run state prison system to make sure those that commit heinous crimes or commit violent crimes and are sentenced go to prison and stay there. We got to get this right.
Sorry to interrupt. Then this is what's interesting to me, that history is repeating itself, isn't it? Like, this really is. This is part. This is the remake of Wallace James circa 1977 or whatever it was.
I mean, we've talked about the Bob James first administration. You look at a chapter in his 4 years in office, a big part of it would be dealing with the prison system. And again, I've got to think the governor's office wants to get this addressed. And that's why it behooves them to say, well, let us give everybody an update so that if there's any question about where we are, let us tell you. I mean, unfortunately, because of the cost of everything, it has gone up, but we are on track to build them. Here's the date we expect to have them built. And then they have to hold the construction companies who are building them accountable to that timeline. I can tell you, if the state house gets built, it'll probably be the fastest built building in the state of Alabama history.
But, Paul, there's just no reason to think that this is – I mean, I am – my confidence is sour. You sound like – you have a little more confidence than I do that they will get moving on this, but I don't feel like this is in a good place, and I don't get a sense of urgency from the Ivey administration at all. Now the legislators who voted in that special session will say the same thing to you, that you don't get the sense that anything's going to get corrected in a sufficient amount of time.
Well, And that's why if I were the legislative leadership, I'd say we're going to have everybody come to Montgomery. We're going to have a full question and answer session so that everybody gets their answers questioned and do hear a sense of urgency. I mean, look, we talk about education reform. We talk about economic development. How is this right now not the most important issue that needs to be addressed in this state? Because we don't want some sort of federal takeover where violent prisoners are released to our communities. And then we're talking about a murder, a rape that should not have been happened by somebody that was released from prison that shouldn't have happened. To me, public safety is the number one priority of state government. It is more important than any other issue out there. And that's why this makes this corrections issue that people, they're not sitting over the coffee shop talking about it. This is why it should be the number one priority. And folks like you ask fair questions. Is there a sense of urgency? What is the timeline? When are these going to be built so we can put all this behind us?
Yeah, and the California experience, I mean, they're still recovering from that. They still have problems. When they had to do mass releases, and look, the federal government comes in, and this is the way I understand it works. They don't care about your guidelines. They don't care about any of that. You got to meet a certain threshold as far as they're concerned. They're going to help you meet it. And then you're going to fix your problems, your systemic problems within your corrections. And then they're just going to send you a bill. And Paul, I'll tell you what, I mean, at times I feel like there's people in legislative leadership and in the executive branch that are just like, just bring it on federal government. This is too heavy of a lift for us politically. We can't stand this. You know, it's just like Jesus take the wheel. Well, I don't know. I guess in this case, Department of Justice Merrick Garland take the wheel here and figure it out for us.
Well, I mean, but the governor has taken on controversial stuff in the legislature. So I don't think, not that you're not doing it, but I don't think she can be accused of sidestepping some stuff that was controversial, and she's had some accomplishments, whether you agreed with them or not. And the legislature has passed controversial stuff. So to me, when you're saying this is about public safety, we got to get it right and look at the money that this state has right now, and folks are looking where they're going to spend it. We got to get it right. We got to get it right because we were just talking, Jeff, you and I were talking just 6 months ago when they were releasing folks from prison who, you know, we talked should be released from prison, and they were releasing them earlier and they're using retroactive, and some folks were out on the streets and they didn't know where they were. How often do we have to see this? How many times do we have to hear about this over and over? There was a kid, somebody was shot and killed in Baldwin County, or was killed. She was hit and killed by somebody that served 5 years for a manslaughter charge. I mean, how often do we have to hear this over and over and over? That's why this has got to get fixed. And I don't think we need to wait till the next legislative session to hear about status.
Well, like I said, though, I don't. To me, there's just not a lot of confidence I have in this system to get through it and get to where they need to be. But it is what it is. Hey, real quick, just a couple minutes, Paul, before we let you go. AL.com, our friends at AL.com, and I know you're keeping up with the melee in Montgomery there, the rumble, the riverfront, but it turns out the media speculating that Donald Trump may have had something to do with this. Oh, believe it or not. But it turns out, as far as I can tell, the only evidence of any political attachment is that one of the voters votes a Democrat. I mean, one of the suspects votes a Democrat primary. So anyway, but the media have just jumped a shark here, haven't they?
Yeah, and I'm glad you posted that because it's just more of the same. That they have made this all about race when it didn't need to be. They're looking for creating this narrative just to how let's make Alabama look bad. Let's look for this. Let's get this out there in the national spotlight. Try to tie it to Trump when it's not. I mean, the headlines they were doing about. I mean, I've never seen some of the headlines. White, what was it? White, two white folks arrested. I mean, have you seen that before, Jeff? Have you seen that before? In the headline,
no.
You know, what you follow, you look at the headlines, at least on AL.com. Have you ever seen that before?
No, it was across the board, up and down the list there, Paul. I mean, it was just remarkable that they had to two or three white men arrested for beating up a black man or something like that, and that's the whole story there. But that's the way they took it.
How can you not say that what AL.com has been pushing racism themselves, the largest media organization in the state, that's what they've been pushing. What they say they're against, they're pushing it.
Not themselves. Today. To quote Roy Johnson of AL.com, not today, white people. Hey, Paul, we're a little long here, but we're out of time. But you've been very kind to be with us, and we will do this again, probably on my show sometime. But thanks for doing this.
All right, Jeff. Hope you and your listeners have a great rest of the day.
You do the same. Paul DeMarco there with us. We got to get a break in here. Boomer, take us away. This is Jeff Poore, filling in for Phil Williams on Right Side Radio. Welcome back to Right Side Radio. Jeff Poore filling in for Phil Williams, who's getting some well-deserved time off. Coming up in the next hour, State Senator Garland Gunger of Coleman. He'll be with us as we roll on through the program. You'll be in touch with me. Feel free to call in 833-687-4448. Or if you prefer the alphanumeric translation, 833-68-RIGHT. Right Side Radio. Let's see what we got here. Why don't we get to this in the next segment when I got a little more time, went a little long with Paul there, but we only had it for just a brief amount of time, couldn't go two segments. But we have a Republican state. We have Republicans up and down the constitutional offices in Alabama. We have a Republican supermajority in both chambers of the Alabama legislature. And sometimes you hear us complain, Dale Jackson and I and Phil on Grand Council. Sometimes it doesn't reflect that. Sometimes it seems as if we're still in the throes of a blue dog, yellow dog, Democrat sort of governance. That it's socially conservative, but pro big government, pro. You know, the government is the solution for everything. What's going wrong here? Is there a disconnect? Is there a disconnect between the views of Alabamians? I got to tell you, during some of these Republican primaries and the kind of candidates that Republicans are nominating, I got to question that. Is this really a conservative state? Not that it's not liberal. It's not woke. But just how right-wing is Alabama? And then you really thinking about it, is it, you know, maybe it's this. Maybe you guys out there don't put government on the pedestal, so you're not thinking about politics all the time. You got your church, you got your family life, you got other things, and you don't look at government sort of like somebody like me, like this is kind of like what I do, right? This is my living. But there just seems to be this disconnect between what the political stripes of the state and what people in Alabama, the way they approach politics, what they think of politics, and the reality, like how we're being governed and who's really calling the shots there. So I'm going to get into that in the next segment. There's a little teaser for you. Anyway, we got to get a break in here, get to the top of the hour. This is Jeff Poore filling in for Phil Williams here on Right Side Radio.
Right Side.